to welcome the minister and the deputy minister in our meeting. It is indeed a very good morning. We are here to receive the strategic plan of the department and also the annual performance plan for the year 2016-17. Without wasting much time, I would request the secretary to give us apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is the proposal received from Mr. Kwankwa, UDM, and the team who are attending the G-Bridge Forum. They will be joining us shortly after the meeting. Thanks.
Yes, do you have any other apology?
Yes, ma'am. Natasha Mazzoni, she is attending the Ethics Committee in this morning, so she's tendered her apology as well.
Thank you very much. We will now allow the department to take us to the structure. Then it will be followed by the annual performance plan, and also we'll have a briefing on the performance target of state-owned enterprises. I don't know if me, the minister, would like to do the opening remarks before the DG. Over to you, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I am the DG of the department here, Nana DG, and Mr. Sileke, the DM, Kulelani Ngwanishe. Is that thing that I either get a hiding from the president or I get a hiding from you. So I've chosen this morning to take half a hiding from you and half a hiding from the president. So maybe it's not too hard. So I'll be here for the first part of it and then DM will leave a delegation from there. But let me just say my DG, Mr. Sileke, leads the team who are behind you, Komotso, she's the DDG for transport, and so she can answer all the questions on transport if they quit. What I'm saying is an acting the DDG, and she's acting in Matsuka's place, because Matsuka has been at a terrible motorbike accident. And she's legal and, I don't know. But Nansen is the acting DG because that DG, because that position is called vacant for corporate affairs. And Sidi is the DDG for strategic partnerships. And Jackie is for April. And Pulukin is with the DM. Khalid at the back there is my PLO. The chef with the tie is not my husband. He's Professor Plagis, he's my fish advisor. And Hitatsu is the DDG for manufacturing, which is now Fastball and Amstel System. Active DDG, and in the process of appointing, is Maholo. I just forgot the name now because I've got pictures of her at the jazz. And then I'm pushing her cotton. I sold this up in my office. There's nothing better. So they'll be able to also answer some of the questions that you have. But Chair, I just want to be in essence, my department is actually, the whole department is the oversight department. So they have another responsibility. They only have to do oversight over the six legal companies. And presently, the global economy has to face these serious headwinds that have posed challenges to most emerging markets, including South Africa. This has made the implementation of our policies and programs more challenging. In 2016, the economy is expected to grow below 1%. Our focus is to ensure that we turn the growth story around and position ourselves to drive economic recovery and set the economy on the growth trajectory with better developmental outcomes. Such investments have been essential to minimize the impact of the economic crisis in 2008, and it remains essential for the economy going forward. Our position as DPE is to ensure that we leverage our SOCs to drive the industrialization program, accelerate transformation of the economy, and support African development. The strategy of the department is intended to ensure that this is realized. When I assumed the position of Minister of Public Enterprises, some of the SOCs under my portfolio were facing government challenges. And of course you also remember that we had many, many days with no electricity and a whole range of other issues. We immediately embarked on a roadmap which entailed a program of intervention with a view to review leadership and create stability on the SOC board. And in energy, the success in the turnaround of ESCOM centers around four pillars. The one is stable leadership, execution of the maintenance plan. You remember when I made a presentation previously that there was something that 6 months of maintenance that were happening at the time because of the cost of maintenance, to the situation now where at any one time there's just about 3,000 megawatts that are not on the grid. And previously we've had anything between 7,200 megawatts, and then just the chance of any breakdowns within any one of our power plants. And at the moment, part of the story is that the maintenance that plan is adhered to quite strictly. Delivery of the bold program and, of course, financial sustainability. In fact, at some point, we were in a position where we thought we would have no money by the 15th of January and at a particular time. And I know that some journalists have been chasing that story at the time. And now we're in a much better financial position. Of course, part of that is the fact that we've had the 23 billion rand financial sustainability support from government. So over the last year, we have made progress in executing each one of these pillars. Great improvement in leadership stability. The board and management have been able to demonstrate sound performance and governance of all the executive roles for. Significant improvement in the execution of maintenance that ensures required maintenance is executed while lights stay on. Load shedding has become a thing of the past, and I'm very comfortable with the load shedding. The usage of diesel has also been reduced significantly. In fact, in the last 2 months, they used no diesel. With monthly budget reduced from almost 1 billion rand a month to 40 million per month, the GCE has assured me that there is no prognosis for load shedding over the winter months. Improvement in financial position, and let me just take one step back. The issue, often people say that yes, you could do no load shedding because the summer and people use less electricity. 32,000 megawatts used in summer, 36,000 megawatts, 37,000 megawatts used in winter. With Ingula having on Good Friday, the second unit has come online kind of before the time in a way. And so we have 3,033 megawatts additional, 333 megawatts. I would say 666, I'm superstitious, it's antichrist. So 2,333 megawatts times 2 have come online, and by the end of, before the year ends, all 4 units will be online. So I've been quite pleased with the, we initially said that those units will all be online by 2018. And so lots of hard work has gone into bringing those units online at Ingula. With Madhupi and, well, there's been an improvement in the financial position, as I've told you. And the company is working diligently with my department to ensure compliance with equity conditions set by the Minister of Finance. I started with the progress with Ingula, and I'm confident that Madhupi and Kusile, we're still holding on to the previous time frame, but I'm more than confident that at least two more units will be online from both Ingula, Kusile and Madhupi before the year ends. But we'll keep you posted about that. Over the next year, the ESOM focus will be the delivery of all these additional units. And also achieving cost-cutting measures, strengthening the transmission grid. Remember that that's one part of the problem with the IPPs, that IPPs are built in some areas where there are no, where we don't have transmission grid. So there's been a discussion between myself and the Minister of Energy with ESOM to ensure that we strengthen those transmission grids and to support the IPP program and the electrification expansion. And the turnaround approach, I'm hoping, can be replicated in other stocks, even outside of the DPE fold. Since we've developed a dashboard for operational performance and sustainability of all of the state-owned companies. In terms of the industrialization effort, now the incoming board of directors has reviewed the sub-strategy. This has led to they have an acquisition strategy where they're going to partnerships with companies to drive a manufacturing process. And so they reviewed this and have decided that that is a process that they would continue to embark on. And driven by a need to build strategic capabilities informed by the 2014 defense rule review, being pegged back to preserve resources. The focus of the board in the medium term will be on improving cash management, focused on improving working capital management, and opening new markets through strategic partnerships in identified markets. The cash situation at the SOC has stabilized, and the 850 million notes brought to the market in the fourth quarter of 2015-16 by the second company was oversubscribed, showing the market confidence in the intervention at the SOC. The SOC has embarked on an aggressive product portfolio augmentation program, and notable programs are the launching of the SARA regional aircraft to address African air travel requirements, and the midlife upgrade of the Royfalk. And the Royfalk, launch of the Royfalk upgrade program is a product of employment of a helicopter in peacekeeping mission in DRC, where it equipped itself quite well. Avexco is continuing to show pleasing progress in its recovery, and the operations are being maintained, contributing positively to the socio-economic recovery of the Rustenburg region. Of course, as you know, the land restitution program, which we do with rural development and land reform, we continue as Avexco to do the mining, while rural development empowers the community to receive their dividends, their training and capability. In fact, today the Minister has brought to the Cabinet Committee a re-look at the deed of sale so that we can take that to court and get an approval from court. That we relook so that having so much money has created enormous insecurity in the community. And we've got to find a different way to actually ensure that they get what is rightfully theirs, but that it's not done in a way that we almost spend millions on the middle person rather get it all into households. And that's been the quite a huge challenge. And the focus going forward is to actually ensure or to assist the community to utilize the proceeds from the mining for development of agriculture, mariculture, and industrial enterprises in order to ensure economic activity beyond the life of the mine, so that the money just doesn't go into profits instead of going into ensuring a different quality of life for people living in the South. The SAFCOL board has reviewed such a strategy and it is placing greater emphasis on beneficiation going forward without compromising soil log security of supply to SME formals. In this regard, the state of Kapne has developed plans to upgrade the Timbadola sawmill in Limpopo and the re-establishment of a Sari sawmill complex. This will have a positive impact on the top plans to stimulate the furniture manufacturing and timber frame building industries in this rural region of our country. In fact, we've been meeting with all the premiers around building, especially where there are backlogs on schools and clinics and so forth. And in fact, the Free State has actually taken a pilot project from SAFCOL to build some of the utilities that's needed in the... It's a pilot project so that we could actually look at alternative... material. Now, Transnet is actually most affected by the slowly declining economic growth. And I saw recently a media article to say that they would be cutting back on almost something like 200 billion rand or something. Now, they're not cutting back on their capital expenditure. They are rather moving this to the outer years so that you continue but with the economic downturn in commodities, it has been, you can't move something you are not being given to move. So, and of course, Transnet also has to look at diversifying its capabilities within the freight and logistics area. So the company is rephasing its investment plan to a longer-term plan in order to better align capacity creation to expected demand. It also shifting focus towards capturing greater market share in the domestic market and extending its footprint in the wider African market. This will also see Transnet diversifying into commodities more to increase the amount of general trade traffic. That would include agriculture, retail, and so forth as well. What's very interesting, Transnet only occupies 15% or 30% of the freight logistics in the country. Often we speak about the monopolies, but it's 30% is hardly a monopoly. But for both Transnet, SA Express and ISCOM, the Minister of Finance and I were speaking about how we build greater private sector participation. Now, in Transnet, we're looking at new ports, and that's Bukhubai up in the Northern Cape, Port Nolloth, but also looking at inland terminals that could actually be run by the private sector. So that we have greater risk or shared risk being taken by the private sector as well. And if they express, you've heard the announcement, it's very hard for a feeder airline and a regional airline to be able to exist with one code. And the code belongs to FAA. And FAA's code is divided among FAA Express, Mango, and FAA Airlink. And so we are speaking about how we either merge the two or create, as I always have been speaking about, a holding company that keeps all the companies within our fold, which includes Mango, in one. But, I mean, this is sort of discussion, and that would then, we'll be able to leverage a larger, a larger company, actually, to be able to get a strategic partner. And I think the legislation makes provision for a 25% strategic partner. Well, because we must expand market opportunities and grow the market share of ourselves. And this is DBE is pursuing the African market as a potential growth area in response to the regional integration as determined by the National Development Plan. The SOCs will be pursuing opportunities in the following countries. In terms of Transnet, the following countries have been identified: Tanzania, Kenya, and Burundi. With regards to ISCOM, the following countries will be focused on: the DRC, Mozambique, and Uganda. Danel will be looking at Egypt, and ISEXPRESS looking at Ghana. These will form some of the continental engagements that the department and SOC will be prioritizing in the new financial year. And furthermore, it is important that these projects are structured in the most financially viable and optimal manner and assist us in pooling resources in a way that fosters regional economic integration and strengthen economic relations as well as benefits. It is a deliberate effort by the telecom companies to develop skills and critical skills that are required to support economic growth, including training of artisans, technical and engineering skills. I mean, you just heard recently I answered a question in the house that we will spend $1 billion on just developing technical skills. That's engineering and artisans. Because we need to train more people so that we can meet the demands of the economy. Chair, if there are any questions, we'll be very happy to take them. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Minister, thank you very much for that overview. It gives us an understanding of what's happening in state enterprises, but also to interrogate further the main objective of skills development and job opportunities and growing the economy of our country. Before the GA can give us a brief, we will allow honourable members to interact with what the Minister has said with us. And we will now go to the sub-plan and the annual performance plan. Honourable Spence, we will be the first honourable here and the honourable answer report.
Thank you very much, Chair. Minister, once again, I told you outside I'm very keen to try and meet you, and I'm really grateful for this opportunity that I can perhaps ask you to clarify when the stakeholder contracts are going to, I know that numerous requests have been made for them. What is the delay? You know, why is the release of those being delayed? Because they must be in existence. So do you have any idea as to when they are going to be given to us? I also appreciate the commercial and developmental mandates of the various FOCs. And in your reply, you just mentioned that there was some, you know, management improvement, governance improvement in many of the FOCs. But in many of the FOCs, we see a recycling of the executive management structure, and also your own department has a number of acting or unfilled vacancies. You know, with executive management and that structure essential for driving the entity or the department forward. What are the hindrances or objectives, obstacles, preventing you from being able to have a fully appointed, fully resourced department and the SOCs? Thank you.
Thanks, and greetings to the Minister and the Department, Deputy Minister, DG, and my colleague. Chair, money is just about the new arrangement that seeks to put together the SAA and other entities. Which will actually assist government for to have these issues of these entities with similar objectives. It becomes a problem and it does not make a meaningful contribution to the growth of the economy. But also maybe the DG will take us through that in their strategic plans as to how far that process, but at the political level, we anticipate and SAA now and us because we want all these entities coming together and again. So what is the likelihood of getting some more offices in the future? No, thanks.
Thanks, Chair. And good morning to everyone. I would like to congratulate the gentleman next to Lee for leaving the bachelor's and joining us. let me welcome the overview by the minister. Minister, mine is only one or two. It's within the reduction that has been done by the treasurer in most of the departments. If your department is affected, how? And how do you cope with the reduction of the budget done by the treasury? Especially because you have acting positions that are not permanently filled, and maybe you would want in future to grow the department, and with the budget that you have, would that help us in taking the country forward? And also, Minister, Chair, I want to make a special request to the department to give us an outline or a strategy or a plan that they have in linking all the work of the entities or the strategies of the entities with the 9-point plan, direct link with the 9-point plan that was announced by the president, especially in the infrastructure program and also in unlocking the potential of the SMEs. I know it is within the Department of Small Businesses, but how do you link your economic development mandate, the social economic development money that you have, with that of the other departments that are also part of, that can help in unlocking all those things, the economies, the co-ops and the township and rural enterprises. I think that for now, that's all that I have. Thank you. Honourable Senator?
Thank you for your leeway, Chairperson. Minister, sorry, just to go back to what you were saying about SAA and whether they should be, whether they should merge or be put under a holding company, which would make it a larger organization and then the constitution applies for a 25% strategic partner. Would that strategic partner be a private, or what are the options in terms of that 25% strategic partner? And what would you prefer? Would you prefer a merger, or would you prefer a holding company? And with SAA currently under Treasury and Express currently under DPE, which department do you see it falling under going forward? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before the Minister can respond, I just want to link my question with what Honourable Sanda has just asked in relation to the consolidation that the Minister spoke about. That in this consolidation, the Mambo, the SA and SA Express, Mambo is a low cost and the SA Express is feeder to the SAA. Is there any catering of the law come and the power in that consolidation if it happens? That's the first question. The other clarity, which was one needs to ask the minister, is in relation to the industrialization that you spoke about. Very passionate about it. We all feel that can bring a great relief to the country, but we don't see anything strategic or tangible that can assist, especially the Transnet and CNL, which we hope can bring big projects in terms of in industrialization, taking into account the global economic environment, which are constrained at the moment. But sitting from a layman's point of view, where I'm sitting, I see a great potential in them, not knowing the limitations in those FOEs. Can the minister maybe share with us, are there limitations? Why are we not seeing these big bang projects, like in small arms manufacturing, and not if we are promoting wars in the world, but, you know, those kind of things. And then lastly, from my side, the shareholder management, last year we spoke about it in the last financial year, and we will be asked questions again in this financial year to say, where are we? So if we can be clarified before you go to other engagements, we'd really appreciate. And then also, we thought the stability in Denel in terms of their performances and how the company has been grown from where they were in the past. Now, the suspension of the CEO, the secretary of the company, and also the CFO is a concern, because the element of instability, I mean, if maybe the minister can just share with us on those two things. Thank you.
I just want to clarify one thing. Honourable Minister, are you talking about the shareholder compact? But you spoke about the settled or something.
Settled contract. But specifically, outlines the...
No, you are talking about the shareholder compact.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's right. And I just want to be clear so that when I answer that I'm not answering the wrong thing. Let me just talk about the shareholder compact. This is a part of the reason why we don't put it into the public space is because it is, the companies are also acting as commercial companies. So it's as any commercial company, there are some agreements that we make with them. Not operational agreements, it's more policy agreements, and it's targets that we set within the shareholder compact that we don't publish shareholder agreements for those reasons. But there is What's on the internet, on the computer, on the web page? Master always tells me the answer.
The objective is broadly covered. But I think this is something that I have been faced with for 2 years now. And I am more and more starting to feel that we might have to, and I will talk with my legal people and all the legal people at the companies. Because for 2 years, this portfolio committee has actually put me under pressure on share on the contract. That the shareholder compact then becomes a public document. But what it will then have to cover is the stuff that's not commercially sensitive. And I will have to take that out. I mean, look, I said this last year as well, and I got big opposition from the company itself. But I'm more and more veering towards putting it out into the public space without the commercially sensitive stuff. It is public enterprise, but all of you would like the public enterprise. You see, this is conflict. There's a conflict in that they must become commercially competitive, and they have this developmental agenda that they have to meet. But if they're going to be commercially competitive, then we've got to treat them like a commercial company as well. And there are some things that commercial companies will never put into the public space because it's their targets, it's what they're chasing, it's their financials and so forth. So I think we're just going to have to work out that. And at the next portfolio committee meeting, we could give you an update on it. Because I've now signed off on all of the shareholder contracts for the year, and we just need to. And the DDGs are looking at me with very strange looks. That's something that we need to look at.
Sorry, Minister, I don't want to keep you on this point. I know that a portfolio committee is entitled to perhaps see some more sensitive information. Would you be prepared to let just this portfolio committee with, you know, the requirements of confidentiality or anything like that, to see the full shareholders agreement and then, you know, release to the public the whole thing minus the commercial sensitive information?
Yeah. Look, the greater portion of digital streaming is in our stuff that we'll discuss. Largely, what's in the shield compact fits in the objectives and fits in the stat plan. There's a small amount of things that is financial that is not in the public space. That's what it sees in the public space. Recycling of executive mind. Okay.
My apologies, Minister. I feel that, Minister, you keep on saying the officer will clarify this better. I think we need to in the objectives of the department, maybe I don't want to say maybe we, yes, let me say maybe we do not understand. See, when all the objectives are put there, we do not understand the deeper of the objective. They need to be clarified so that we do not keep on coming with the same question again.
No, but also that I maybe it's the thing that we're going to do as a shield compact and just do it as a thing for the portfolio committee. And then link it into the objectives and into our broader plan.
Then the issue of recycling of the thing.
Look, I have two. I've just appointed a DG. And I was very pleased to be able to find somebody who is an economist, who has a good understanding of, and has run departments much larger than mine.
So that's the strength of it. So I've just appointed EG, and I've actually looked quite, I've advertised about twice to find a DG. So I have two portfolios that I have acting out of seven DDGs. Both of those are in the process of being appointed at the moment. That's the, on the one hand. On the other hand, within the recycling of executive managers, I think the only one I've recycled is actually Brian Leffy. And what I needed in ESCOM was a person who I understood A, the finances, and B, a big picture. Because understand the big picture in terms of what financing and how to run a company. I generally feel that the just in terms of the stabilization of the SOCs, you just remember a year ago all the stuff that we were confronted with on SOC, board members and I didn't like them anyway and stuff like that. It's all in the media. And so I think we've been able to stabilize it much better. And I've recycled Brian. I have to appoint somebody as a CE, and I've already taken to cabinet. I've already appointed the person, but it has to go to cabinet for transfer. And then that would cover, in terms of, let me just deal with the now issue. Now the now is you remember that there was R1 billion profit in the now at the time when the previous people were in. Now we discovered that the R1 billion wasn't clear, and I was saying it's R1 billion clear profit, and it wasn't a clear profit. It was a large ring fence amount that had gone to the roof extra, if my memory serves me well. And then there'd been some other discrepancies within the now that the previous CE and CFO and company secretary, they've asked for more time. So I don't have a report because they asked for more time on the investigation. I'm hoping to have this resolved by the end of June, because if it's not resolved, it does make it difficult to do what you're saying, Jay, in the big bang stuff within the organization. However, having said that, Danel is one of the 100 companies in the world that people want to and can and will do business with. And so the RFR is a big bang project. It's been they've kept it in abeyance for a while, and the fact that it actually is good at peacekeeping does mean that we should be able to manufacture the Royal Falk a lot more. And which of course means that we then have jobs and the employment stuff can happen as well. So I think that's an issue. Same with Transnet. We were going with the president on Friday to show our operation of his stuff as actually dealt with or brought better and greater efficiency at the market. But big bang projects, it's a very, very difficult time in the market to do big bang projects. That's why I'm also dealing with stuff like Bukubai and Port Nollis, so that we can create a better market within a particular area. It's untapped areas, And the untapped areas are often done that. Somebody sent me a note here saying I've redeployed brine, not recycling. The new, you know, there's one big problem. Honourable Member Lu Yenge, you make a point. How far are we? I mean, you're in essence asking how far we were the subject. Now, and that probably deals with SAA and SA Express as well. Anyway, we come to the stock reform a little later. The deduction, Honourable Member Ranta is not here now. Which the options on SAA and SA Express. You know, my preferred option, there's 2.5% that we own of SAA. There's Mango, which is commercial, and then there's SA Express, which is the sort of feeder regional airline, and then there's SAA. My preferred choice, actually, is to merge them. And merge them so that they still do the stuff that they were tasked to do. So SA Express remains a regional airline, Mango remains a low-cost airline, and within that, Chair, I can't tell you how we'll be able to transport the poor other than the low-cost airline. I mean, if I'm really frank about this. Because we're not going to be able to, the problem with airlines, it's not, you know, there's such few private sectors who would actually go and get involved in airlines because the overheads are just so enormous. The cost of fuel, jet fuel, is just, look, it's cheaper now, but it's volatile. And the long haul destination in terms of international flights. So we almost need a medium other airline to buy into it. And so we've got to think about how we do all of this. You know, just in terms of the financial, how we financially sort out these things, we've got to think about many things. Could we list some of the companies? Could we list a portion of some of the companies? I mean, there are lots of things we've got to think of in the stock reform. Because if we list, for example, any one of the companies, we would only be able to list a certain percentage. I think that all of the companies are up to about 25% or 20%. That's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is, and of course anybody can purchase into the company. The other way of doing it is to put a portion, any portion of it, like in France, as you're saying, that's all the internal I'm watching Colin. Am I saying too much? Oh, okay. I must have somebody who controls my mind. We've got to look at how we create the participation for private sector involvement in all of this. So there are a number of things that we're discussing with the Deputy President and the National Treasury. Now, we've done quite a bit of work. We've got, we have the recommendations that have come from our department in terms of the implementation of the PRC. We have the framework for the appointment of board members, which DPSA has done, and then we have available the draft framework for private sector participation, and it looks at all of this. And then, of course, the draft SOE performance monitoring scorecard, and determine which are the things that we need to look at to assert the scorecard. Now, I can bring out today or tomorrow, we could actually put before you the shareholder management bill. But there are 700 companies that we are having to negotiate with. There are 22 companies that are Schedule 2 companies. There are 36 that are Schedule 3 companies. Now, my belief is that it's the two top, Schedule 2 and Schedule 3 companies, that we should get to be governed by this. So that's why, after all of the work has been done, we now have the Deputy President convening all of us so that we can set up a board of ministers who are responsible for the shareholder. Of course, my partners will have to run with it, but they will have to agree to it. And that's where we are at this point. So we're not going to be able to bring out the shareholder management bill, which I thought was much easier last year. I thought we'd bring it out, everybody discusses, everybody comments on it, and so forth. But it does, it talks to the point that Luyeng, Honourable Member Luyeng, is saying, where do they sit? Because we haven't decided what happens. But do we continue to have a DPE? And with DPE, they take all the Schedule 2 and Schedule 3 organizations, companies. Or would we have to establish a separate entity outside of government so that it could be commercially viable and still meet its developmental targets that all the companies are part of? Like HESEC in China, like many other countries. I mean, Norway has a similar model. So those are things that we are going to think about. And those are things that we are going to discuss. But of course, it will be short-term, medium-term, and long-term machinations for it. Will SAA come back to us? Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. Is that it? Or is this not going to be quiet? Yes, we've got a presentation that we can give you where the 9-point plan is going to, we can do it for Cabinet anyway, but we can present it to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, but before you can head over or leave, the last one. Because when you are here, we feel we need to milk you because of your own availability. The last one, Honourable Minister, is that the one of the recommendations from the PRC was that the state-owned enterprises at all levels, even at the provincial level, should be consolidated and separate the commercial ones and non-commercial ones. How far are we with that process? We are from provinces, we have seen the duplication, we have seen the bleeding in terms of finances. There's no proper control, even if AG is there, you know, to do his work, but we need a center to hold across the board.
It's such contested terrain. Because provinces, local governments, they all have their own vehicles. So, and they, in terms of the constitution, they are autonomous. So, it's really a contested terrain. My view is that we've got to try and do that with the national stuff first. There are companies that I have to convince my colleagues are not viable at the national level. There are companies that my colleagues will probably convince me are not viable. There are companies that my colleagues see in my portfolio, but really should be in their portfolio. And I think we must have an open heat about this conversation, because it's absolutely true that the mandates are so diverse and they are so similar to us that you also need all of these things. But having said that, we've started the process in the department with visiting all the provinces and all the states and companies in my portfolio. And it initially started off as going and dealing with electricity jets. And it's moved now to actually looking at all the other state-owned companies very well. And also to get just the state-owned companies to be working with other state-owned companies in the same field. For example, the now makes turbines. Eskom imports turbines. I mean, I'm just using this as an example. There's a company, and I'm speaking about the investment companies that they have in provinces. They do exactly the same as investment companies within the national firm. So, yeah, this is all what we are having to do now. Now that we've got all the paperwork done, now we've got to actually start saying, this is what exists. This must go here, that must go there, and so on. And how do we manage all of it? There's also, what are the mandates, for example? Energy is the policy department for Eskom. I am the shareholder representative for Eskom. Energy has NERSA in, which is the regulatory body for Eskom. Where does Eskom sit in all of this? It's not easy questions to answer in the short term, but it's what we need to actually look at. Remember also I have 200 staff that work for me, or work in the department. What does this mean in terms of the configuration of departments going into the future? So it's an open mind we have to have, all of us have to have, so that we are able to take the state-owned companies and the reform is the reform that lasting reform. Remember, this department was set up initially as a department of privatization. And halfway through that process, it became the Department of Public Enterprises. And that answers my question. My previous job was MEC for Finance in the Western Cape. Now, I really believe that if your budget cuts, you must fit into it. You must deal with it in that way. You can't go and read outside it. You must just do your job. Now, I still think my department is corporate services heavy. I still feel, and the DG is here, I still feel it is too corporate affairs heavy. It should be sector units heavy. It should have all the experts on energy. It should have all the experts on transport, logistics and freight. It should have all the experts on manufacturing within the arms, aviation, trees, the subcultural forestry and so forth, and diamonds. That's what I feel. And we've got to work out, as we move forward, we have to work out how we create the most efficient, or the basic efficiency within the department. In one moment, the department works fine. It does mean we're not going to be able to employ more of energy people or more transport people, but we must look at the corporate affairs side and see what we can bring, what finances can bring from corporate affairs side to our side. Which is the sector unit. I really think that's the department's mandate. And for the rest, we must look at our budget.
Yeah, it's a really complex minister, and I hope we must find a way of trying to consolidate all that. But lastly, really the last item now. We hosted the Department of Trade and Industry together with the Department of DPA. And one of the DGs has made a very important observation that we feel if you engage with the colleagues in cabinet, to help to unlock the manufacturing space in maybe South Hall, Denel, and so on and so on, in relation to the, did you say P3 hotel? That legislation which talks about the determination of on the incentives. I don't know if you discussed it as a department, but we feel that can really assist. And in terms of in relation to why the state-owned enterprises are not able to get these incentives, and yet they are expected to create jobs, and then they are excluded based on their character. So these are the issues we feel they need to be strongly pushed through cabinet and treasury so that we are able to move. I mean, it does not make sense you subsidize outside companies, like he made an example of EFCO, which is supposed to sign the offset agreements at a price which is much higher than. And how do we reconcile that?
It's an incredibly difficult, and part of it is to do with the discussion about the monopolistic role of the state-owned companies. It's linked to that. And it's a discussion that we have, because even some DFIs won't fund any of the stocks. Not only in my portfolio, in any of the other portfolios. And so it is, and so we don't benefit from all of these things. And it's interesting because they are, on the other hand, we've got to make provision for private sector involvement that often is way over what we can afford. I mean, I think the cost plus minus is the case in point. You know, that if some actually pays, 40 years ago, even paying for the land where the mines would be built on. So it's something that we have raised. We now have an IMC that's looking at it, so that we actually have to deal with it. But it's a huge problem, because you also have ministers who create these incentives, who are wanting to attract FDI as a sole reason of why they create some of these incentives. I just wanted to say one of the big industrialization programs that we still have is the locomotives. And we need to probably give you a briefing on the locomotive acquisition. It's 1,000+ locomotives. But we are also able to trade within Africa with many of these locomotives, both refurbished and new. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much. I think we can release you or Minister, and we'll remain with the Deputy Minister and to go straight to the strat plan and hand over to you with the DG.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Chair, honorable members. Our Minister has already outlined the key issues which guide our presentation. I would largely deal with the specifics. In other instances, it would be greater outline of certain things that she has already mentioned. I know that our slides are not numbered, but if we could quickly slides. Yeah. Is it showing up there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I would go through the strategic context, the objectives, to show certain areas that the Minister has touched, maybe certain elements that inform the shareholder contract, the strategic outcomes also, which are broader outcomes that we are anticipating to be achieved by the implementation of the objectives, the priorities that have been set aside for 2016-17 financial year. We'll talk to the resources of the department, meaning the human resource capability and the strategy roadmap in the long run. In the next slide, we would, on the second bullet, take you through the changes that have to be introduced into the plan. Minister has outlined broadly these changes, but these changes also would talk to the 9-point plan, because 9-point plan is relatively also a new intervention. And the core of what it is embedded in what we do. And also, I think, this is more of a reflection for the previous slide. Let me move through the strategic context. The strategic context is the things we know. One of these things that we know is that the current state of the economy presents a major challenge. And this challenge is a result of our economy overly dependent on the mining sector. And the commodity prices and also the demand having gone down, we realize that there's an expectation of the state to play a key role in the economy. And the state can largely do so by actively utilizing the state-owned companies to intervene in the economy and sustain the jobs that we have currently. And you recall also that this is how it happens. Through borrowing, we have been implementing our hazards program, both through ESCOM and Transnet and other state-owned companies. The implementation of that through outsourcing the greater participation of private sector. So in that sense, there's this multiplier effect that happens through the implementation of our CapEx program, where on one side, the greater investment by the state in field development, by giving both the previous advantage individuals an opportunity to participate in sectors that they normally wouldn't participate, by investing in the younger part of our society, in the youth, to ensure that we prepare our capacity for the future. So that's more or less a roundup summary of the active involvement of the state through state-owned companies. Through outsourcing, then you've got SME participation because they play a key role in implementing most of our programs. And lastly, this was expressed by the Minister of our Economic Development when he said that we survived the meltdown because of our CAPEX program and the active participation of our state-owned companies. So lastly, ESCOM and Transnet play a very key meaningful role in ensuring that has happened. But we have learned these lessons, particularly if I had to cite an example of Transnet. I would say that Transnet is largely a logistics-based company. The over-dependence on the mining sector and the commodity crunch has affected the area in the early immediate, meaning the current scenario. Then it means then going in the future, because I'm talking about implementing the strategic plan. I'm saying our strategic plan going, these are certain scenarios that we are dealing with. And more or less, they give a cheating guidance on going forward how the state-owned companies will behave. And as DTE, we would then be inducing them to navigate through these rough waters for these lessons that we've learned. And the infrastructure network that is geared for communities and not support regional integration and internationalization. See, this is one other part. The 9-point plan emphasizes also greater emphasis and investment on industrial development. And then we realize then that we need to support initial projects of industrial development. So that's where, if you look at Transnet engineers, they play a very key role through the local project, acquisition and localization of the locomotive project. Interesting, Jefferson, last month we were handing over to Botswana about 40 locomotives. I'm not sure if the number is 40, but that was the broader target. But I know that we completed over 30, and the remaining balance will be given in the next 2 months. It was quite an exciting moment to realize that Transnet Engineering has the capacity to build a world-class coach. In fact, in three formats, the business plan format, the normal format, and the other ones that simply low. And the Minister of Ghana was very excited that actually they have bought the coaches in Africa. So a neighbor in South Africa manufactured locally. There were people who were spreading rumors of cheap to Botswana that no, we are buying these coaches from China and simply painting them. So because they could not believe that we could deliver them within that short space of time. Yeah, that's right. So through the extra deployment of our three centers, which is the Bloemfontein one, the Durban one, and the Kudus one in Pretoria North. The combination of that enables Transnet Engineering to put together these coaches within the 5 time. The Minister of Transport in Botswana paid a direct visit on site to go and see and inspect whether there is work happening in our factories. And they were quite excited and happy to realize that we were manufacturing in construction. And the team that even participated in that, you see the distribution of age, a mixture of student artisans and very young ones, it's actually creating that filtering, exciting experience. And more or less, it ascertained us that the target that we set, that you present to yourself, are largely achievable. And there's actually greater commitment. And we want to build from that and do more of that. So the industrialization project is achievable. I think that's the point I want to emphasize. Because the minute you achieve something, you gain the confidence and you want to do actually more of it. So that's the elaboration on the part of industrialization. Moving through to the next slide, more important also with the reasons that I've highlighted is that investment in the economy has remained below the national development plan target. Because we've also learned, particularly with another example also around Transnet, is that you set target on the basis of your regions of the economic indicators now, but you realize 3-6 months down the line, the indicators are changing. And as they change, because you use more money, you cannot just go on to spend money, knowing very well that now the terms of the economy have changed. So you are more like throwing that money in the deep end. So hence you realize that from time to time, we keep on changing. So in essence, certain projects sometimes are put on a freeze with the hope that the economic conditions will change. And also there's exploration for newer ones which are more diverse and less in time. That can obviously keep us with time. So our job is very dynamic, I should say. So the strategic plan that we present to yourself is also molded within that particular perspective. That it will continue to be dynamic with the ever-changing times as we face challenges. And I need to emphasize that also but it will continue to be important for our institutions to play a leading role, both in the short and the medium term. Because commitment to the economy has slowed down. That one government normally has to step in to sustain the purchasing power, because the only time the economy thrives is when there's greater exchange of money and the purchasing power, the fluidity of the money continues to keep the economy going. So that is a very, very important aspect that we need to bear in mind. In some of the figures we have presented before, on the next slide, is that since 2005, the investment by the public sector amounted to about 80 billion, and over the 10-year period between then and now, it has increased to 261 billion. So that movement also says a lot about the state involvement. But the good thing about it is that the private sector has almost covered that investment to around 400 billion levels. And the reality is that those investments are still dominated by the mining and the financial services. So we have to put our greater emphasis and focus on the manufacturing sector. Now, the implications of the changes in the economy, we bear in mind that the implementation of the plans will be more challenging. And the optimization of the investment, and also to focus on the diversification of our economy, is also key. And the third one is that our state-owned companies also are expected to support the recovery of other sectors of the economy. In the last presentation, Chairman, if you recall, I said that one of the reasons also that we contribute to the reduction in revenue on the public transport is that we also have to accommodate the key player of its clients in the mining sector. Because there's a reduction in revenue on its clients, it also has to give concessions, meaning it has to reduce its rates to accommodate them. So it's more like also subsidizing other key players to stay on business. So that's why also on a lighter note, it's important for us not to completely dilute their gearing capability. Their ability to keep their asset base intact without necessarily diluting it, it gives them the power to subsidize other sectors of the economy, to give them a chance to grow. Which more or less also, Jefferson, that is an issue to highlight, that now the demand in terms of the leadership and the skill level of a federal company, it requires people of a certain kind who understand this dynamism, so that the orientation should not only be company management, private sector orientation, but the greater aspect of its developmental orientation on how to play a further figure role in the broader context of the economy. Now, if you look at the portfolio, then in that table, the table says that at the total portfolio at the base of our 68 owned companies, which is up to around 908 billion, which is quite a very good leverage on the part of government. And with investments that we're doing in Eskom and Transnet, this particular asset value is continuing to grow. Probably in a short time it should go over a trillion. And that's quite encouraging, because it gives them the ability to borrow and spend and continue to stimulate the economy. So I think if we can sustain that towards the outer years, we will be reaping the results. I've talked much around the greater emphasis on supporting the industrial development, which is the area where we are saying what has changed going forward. We have seen the need to support the industrial development program. But this is how we see it. Over and above the fact that there are major
industrial opportunities that are generally identified. We would also want to use our state-owned companies to ensure that industrialization does not happen only on areas that traditionally have been happening over time. We use their ability to influence change in different spaces to ensure that industrial development, including job creation opportunities, happen also in other peripheral areas. Hence, the second point that talks about the strengthening of the intergovernmental relations. We are actively engaging provincial and local government counterparts to identify hubs of development where our state-owned companies can play a leading role. So that as they also plan for outer years, the plan is not just inward in terms of how they want to drive the Transnet business or the ESCOM business. But it should also be informed by the plans that are coming from provinces and the municipalities to say, in our areas, this is what we want to do. And because they've got the capability of planning, they've got the capacity to be able to plan, to do business case analysis, then they will work closely there with that local level, government level, to ascertain the business plans, the business cases. As we go out looking for funding, those can also be able to ensure that development happens also in those areas, so that our economy is broadly diversified. It's a journey that we are starting to understand meaning in this track plan going forward. We're learning how to do it from one province to the next. So far, we have already covered three. We've covered Mpumalanga, we've covered the Free State, we've covered Northern Cape. I think we should have been in the Eastern Cape, they postponed us. But we are targeting to finish it by the end of May. And in this journey we go with our state-owned companies. And it is quite exciting in a sense that the reflection that we get on their part, it is quite encouraging. We are hoping that with the mayor plans that are already on the table, the minister talked about the port of Bohubai, the port of Port Nolloth, those will become immediate cases. A second to that question also is what we have come to realize that our state-owned companies have the capability to change the shape of the country, meaning the special dimension, maybe creation of the new cities, creating the new face of South Africa. And that in itself, it adds more to a discussion that we must not weaken their capability to do so. And that's another discussion, of course, that comes into other aspects, which I may not want to get into now. But I'm trying to emphasize that in what we are presenting to you as a structure and the APP, this is the orientation. The need also for the active engagement with society, I've already touched around that one, where we realize that through our CSI program, we've come to realize that small projects of CSI do not have the mayor impact. So what we are trying to do, we plan also with provinces and municipalities so that they have the kitty, and then we can have also a big bang approach, maybe in skills development, in supporting education initiatives, and all other initiatives that comes with that. So it was quite an exciting moment in a small township of Rigi in the Northern Cape, I think it's around Kimberley, where the minister was awarding 50 bursaries for engineering-related studies. And if you look at the poverty level, the unemployment level, and you realize that just the 15 bursaries, it touched the emotion of the community. They could see those 15 individuals as ambassadors of change for the future. And the interpretation of the role of ESCOM in that particular community is obviously the reflection changed immediately. that it's not only about, as I'm saying, pay us, but also the plowing back. So that's an orientation we are also implanting in our state-owned companies, to see that importance, because we bring the CEs with us, so that they also get that connection. And as they go back to their offices, they are touched and they want to do more of that. So in a sense, Chairperson, we are saying in terms of changing the culture of doing work, we bring in different approaches of ensuring that the space between the leadership of the state-owned companies, the department, and the community that we have is closer. And our thoughts are not just ideally informed by books and theories, but by much more of what we feel and what we see. So I think this slide has covered all those things extensively. Quickly taking you through to the strategic outcomes, many have elaborated on this one. I think I should not over-elaborate that we are looking on the oversight responsibility to ensure that the financial sustainability is maintained. But we work in that journey with our state-owned companies to support ESCOM on the program of ensuring that municipalities pay. We supported them with their NERSA application to ensure that they are able to collect the right revenue, and that revenue will put them in a stable financial footing to be able to complete the real program and put us in the energy security of the country. So ideally, that's what financial sustainability is about. It applies across the board. That's why Minister said that with the SA Express, the challenges are there, that in terms of their revenue, there's challenges. So the plans to grant them with SAA and all that is to primarily address this particular area. And tough call also, their movement into greater industrial development, the furniture industry, it's also opportunities for them to for the revenue generation and to put them on a path of financial sustainability. Also exploring export opportunities in Africa. And if I talk lightly on that one. Exploring commercially viable operation is another one, where we extensively ensure that before this PFMA application is approved, we apply our minds thoroughly that whatever the operation that they're putting on the table is commercially viable. Capital project delivery, we also put pressure on especially the two major ones, SCOM and Transnet, that key capital projects are delivered on time, because if that doesn't happen, it becomes a cost override issue. We are strengthening also our institutional arrangement for accountability. We have established a setup where every quarter I have to meet with all the CEs mandatory. Of course, over and above, I've got one-on-one engagements with them on key issues, but it's mandatory for us to meet quarterly now. To engage thoroughly, and the minister or the deputy minister also to engage the board chairpersons, and I think next week minister will be meeting all the boards combined, so that this greater oversight emphasis is put in place. And efficiency also, to make sure that the cost effectiveness is a key driver for their operational systems. We've talked about industrialization. Skills development is an area that I cannot avoid to overemphasize for that person. Because ideally, for us to have black pilots today, for us to have some of the colleagues who are here, some of them were trained through the state-owned companies as engineers, women empowerment, youth empowerment. It is quite costly, that I need to highlight. It is quite costly. And only the state-owned companies can do that. Private sector, at the time, they look at the bottom line, the profits, increasing the profit to make sure that the shareholders reap the dividends that they want. So that balance, that's why they slow development on that side. But the state-owned companies are not only in South Africa, world over. You see in China, you see in other countries such as Norway, you realize that state-owned companies play a key role in investing in skills development. for now and for the future, and not only for the Bitcoin company, also for the broader economy and the industry. Enterprise development, SMEs, opportunities. So these are elements that come through into the shareholder complex. I think that I should highlight. All these elements that are resulted in the shareholder complex, they are targets. But they are driven by all these elements to say to them that you must deliver on these. And in the complex, there's certain numbers that are assigned to say, under the conditions you must meet this particular target. But this is the framework that informs the shareholder compact. Moving to the next slide, that goes to the strategic objectives. It's more of the repetition of what I've talked about, just in a different format to say, in terms of financial sustainability, the output will look at the improved balance sheets, the funding options identified, commercial viability, the output indicator will be looked at the increased electricity reserve margins from the part of ESCO, improving the productivity at the port, so there will be measures assigned to it, the shift from road to rail, transportation of freight largely from road to rail, so that those are the key indicators, and I'm hoping that in our quarterly report we'll be reflecting now as to what is the movement as far as this area are concerned. I think we can be read, Chairperson, I don't need to read them one by one. I can just quickly then pursue to the next slide. Maybe on the industrialization, because the key is going to be driving us going forward, the key output there will be looking at the competitive supply development program. To make sure that in all our acquisition program, like the locomotive as an example, that the packaging of the supply development program gives space for the local companies to be able to become the core suppliers for most of the components. If you recall the presentation we did with the DTI, it talks very closely with what we are talking about here. The increase in the local content, building the business case for access to the incentives, as we talked about, to make sure that our state-owned companies also are given incentives. I think skill development and the policy, shareholder policies also reflected there. Moving to the next slide, that talks through to the priorities for the financial year 2016-17. We're looking forward in that year, Chairperson and honorable members, to finalize the shareholder policy concept paper, which will be guiding broadly other state-owned companies on how to play the meaningful role as a shareholder. Exploring funding options also for the state-owned companies. We from time to time have to explore the basket funding options, cheaper financing, so that most of these plans that we have are able to be implemented. I talked at length on the intergovernmental relations and strategic partnerships, the support for the implementation of the Black Industrialist programs is also one area to make sure that the opportunities that are there in the state-owned companies advance this key government objective. Skills development program talked to it, strengthening of the financial position of state-owned companies. Here we are monitoring them quarterly. The position to pursue the African market. The Botswana example is just one of the other examples. Some projects are at the conceptual phase, some are at an advanced phase. I think in our next quarterly report, we will share also the progress in as far as the plan is concerned. We actually have developed the Africa strategy. That's how we call it. Africa strategy. It's a key strategy in line with what Minister talked about, that we are targeting certain countries because it's almost immediate. In the outer years, we'll have others. You remember there were other AU obligations in terms of pursuing the rail, the industrialization agenda and all that. So in reality, some of these opportunities also at the country level, you realize that if we leave this space, other countries will come and occupy it. So as South Africa also, we have to play a key role. But state-owned companies become key in this sense, that they are generally expected to be brave enough to enter this uncharted terrain. And after it opened up, it's only then our private sector falls. So I think on that note, it becomes more symbiotic. We have carefully ensured that when we develop these targets, we follow the process that of thorough assessment of the operational environment, the policy requirements, and also our ability to execute the targets. We've seen in the past that we have set too high targets, and then in the end, some we could not meet. But this time, I think we are refining the manner in which we are setting our targets. We want to ensure that we preserve the assets. I think that that demonstration of our asset value and our continuous plan to grow the asset base also is evidence to it. That as we explore the new markets in the African continent and other continents of the world, we make sure that it has a direct benefit in improving the financial position of our state-owned companies. And we'll also be monitoring the implementation very closely. The next slide, I'll just give you some generic targets, which probably is the time allows the person I can take GDG, will take us through some of these targets for ESCOM, for per state-owned company. Just briefly, without necessarily going into elements. I think, Makola, you can quickly take ESCOM and we follow. So it's important also to demonstrate to the committee that these EDGs are hard at work, etc. They are not here to listen to me speak. You must hear from them also, because most of this work they have to drive on a daily basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DG. In terms of the ESCOM summarized targets, I think firstly to say that the compact and the performance targets set for the SOCs are driven by the objectives that the DG has already highlighted and that are covered on slide 9. And also to ensure that the performance management for the SOCs is strongly linked to the performance of government and the performance of the minister, so that you know there is strong correlation in terms of how they do actually unfold. In terms of ESCOM specifically, there are four key performance areas in which we get when we compare ESCOM. The first one is the financial sustainability, operational performance, the capital spent, and the socio-economic aspects of the business. In terms of financial sustainability, ESCOM is projecting 180 billion rand revenue. This is for the year 2016-2017. And the revenue growth is will be driven primarily by the tariff adjustment as approved by NERSA and implemented as last week Friday. And also driven by the new growth opportunities as highlighted by the DG in terms of the Africa strategy. You would have seen already ESCOM has been able to find a way to trade within the South African power pool to ensure that the areas where there is capacity available, it can be made available to neighboring countries to ensure that there is mutual growth with our neighbors. In terms of operational performance, targeting a 10% performance in terms of maintenance, that is what is termed the PCLF, that is the plant capacity loss. The plant capacity loss factor, that refers essentially to the level of maintenance that the entity will execute over the next year. And that's to ensure that we still do the higher level of maintenance while we are keeping the lights on. In terms of capital, CAPEX, the distribution part was to place greater emphasis that ESCOM plays its role in terms of ensuring that the grid is ready to connect both ICPs, which are primarily not in the areas that were identified in the 10-year GDP. So to ensure that ESCOM can ring-fence that funding and make sure that the grid is ready to take on new projects. In terms of the total CAPEX, that's the total money that ESCOM will spend over the next year, and that is primarily for Medupi, Kusile, and the completion of the Ingula project. In terms of the socio-economic targets, there is a target that ESCOM will spend 65% of that capital
locally to ensure local spend and local content in terms of the projects that they execute. And in terms of ratification, we do know that the policy of government is that universal access must be achieved by 2030. But we are, however, trying to find areas where we can leverage capacities available to be able to to achieve universal access by 2026. However, that will also be driven by whether the fiscal can carry the additional funding much earlier than what is required. And I think an important point also made in terms of electrification and Africa strategy is to say that as a country, once we achieve universal access, we will sit with this sort of skills in the country and looking at Eskom being able to export together with South African companies and the electrification capability into, you know, the rest of the continent and support the region, SADC and the rest of the continent in terms of their own electrification to ensure that universal access to the continent becomes a reality. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Chair and DG, honourable members. For Transnet, the debt to equity ratio target is 50-50. This means that Transnet should be working below a 50% gearing ratio and they're currently sending at 45.5%. And what they have as target for 2016-17 is to decrease that ratio to about 43.8%, which means that what they are trying to work hard on is to use less debt than what they currently do, so they're looking to increase their revenue to be able to use more of that than debt, which is very good. And then we have ROTA on rail. This is basically a return on ROTA assets. So what we have agreed with Transnet on is for this capital expansion program, we need to be able to see results from the assets that they are acquiring. So as they acquire locomotives, wagons, and invest in the infrastructure, we would like to see more efficiencies coming out of them, which means that they have to stretch their assets more. So this is the target that they have currently to ensure that they achieve about 4.3% of return on total assets on rail. Rail volumes, their target here is the 230.8 million tons. They currently, the latest estimate for this financial year, the end of 2016, is that they would be achieving about 223 million tons, and this is supposed to be increasing to about 230.8 million tons in this financial year. For GFB volumes, target is about 95 million tons, as the DG has already alluded to the fact, as well as the Minister, that Transnet is looking to diversify and move more general freight than they have been moving in the past. This is the target for general freight. And then, as you are aware, there's about 336 billion that Transnet has planned to spend in a 7-year rolling period, and there has been a deferment. So for the current 7-year rolling period, the CAPEX spend is targeted at 277 billion rand, and for the first year we have seen about 22.8 billion spent already. Local content of the total spend of Transnet is targeted at 75%, and triple BEE is around between 70-75%. And then the black women owned, black youth owned, and so on are targeted to be somewhere between 20-35%. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Starting with you now, what we have done, Chair, is we have looked at what we may call the medium KPIs. It's not a full list of KPIs that we contracted. They have to receive against. With regards to the now, in ensuring financial sustainability, we have included in the upcoming financial year the need to improve cash generation from operations. As you have seen on the large order book of 30 odd billion rand, there is quite a huge demand for working capital to execute those orders. Now, in their nature, those execution of such orders tied up cash in the business. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to ensure that we ensure better turnaround of orders through the business to ensure increased cash flow. As we see, if you go further on the operational performance, the achievement of cardinal milestones. Now, these two specific programs that they are executing, we want them to achieve 85% of the cardinal milestones that they have agreed with the customers in each financial year. And if they do that, we'll see that cash coming through. Of course, there's still a huge emphasis with regard to financial sustainability on new orders, on opening new markets. We've obviously heard of some of the partnerships that have struck with certain entities in selected markets. That figure is a bigger than that we expect in this financial year. From the integrity of operational performance, an investment in research and development, that's very critical for a high technology business like now. In order to ensure there are new products in the future, we expect them to spend 8.5% of their revenues on research and development. And this includes the client-funded research and development. Now, going forward, that figure we certainly would like to see closer to 10%, because that's where now the new crop of engineers going forward are going to come, the crop of development engineers are going to come from. Of course, we want to see our people, especially marginalized people, playing a greater role in defense and aerospace. And therefore, the target on the socio-economic front, the BBB target under the new target, under the new code is sitting at 6. It will be going up going forward. We welcome the new codes and the fact that they are putting a lot of pressure on organizations, both public and private, to check up on the transformation fund. And BNL will be taking its role in that regard. With regard to first call, the revenue growth for the coming year will be around 5%. Going forward, of course, as it was said earlier by Minister, there will be, greater emphasis on manufacturing, on the production of timber-free structures, of furniture, adding value to the solar product that gets produced there. And ideally, we want the rural enterprises that are located around their plantations to be the ones that play a role in those new products. We want to see those kind of partnerships so that we start to contribute actively to the rural economic development strategy that our government has embarked on. The subcall and operational performance manages about 10% of commercial forestry land in the country. We've given them a target of 8% in the coming financial year, around 6%. We want them to get to 10% going forward, in line with the share of commercial forestry land. Of course, transformation is also very critical in this particular space. We want to see our people see themselves in this forestry industry, see themselves as active and participants in this industry. We don't want a situation where as the land that is currently being claimed, they're transferred to the communities, gets lost to other industries, including Africa. We want it to remain in forestry is a strategic resource. Or the sole product is a strategic resource, so we need to ensure that it remains so going forward. The total direct employment is 3,000, is another 2,000 people that they brought in on contract basis. So it's a significant layer in terms of employment in our province. Chief, I go to the next slide and speak to Alisco. Alisco, as well, we have placed a little bit more emphasis on them looking after their cash data. As we all know, that they have one operating business currently, which they have 51% in, which is a mine cohort with the community there. As they look for other opportunities and identifying their business going forward, we want them to manage that cash better. I'm sure everyone is wondering what is rental income doing on high school's performance KPI list. They have the properties that developing list from the community are being made available to workers and contractors on the mine. As you all know, Alesco is quite remote, so if you people are going to come there and work, you have to provide them with accommodation. Now, we want to see better management of that portfolio of properties. That's why we have that title. On the diamond production, 188,000 barrels going from, this is quite a big jump, but it is driven by a deep sea mining, which will be, they will be starting in this coming financial year. They have entered into a contract with MDSA, which is going to play the first cell in that area. To have diamonds which have not been mined before. They've mined on land, they've mined in shallow areas, they've done beach mining, but they've never gone to the up to the design. So if you jump to that mining right a few years ago, so now they are able to explore that at that part. So we're very excited about that particular development. And of course, I'm a socioeconomic, the greater drive for us is actually seeing procurement happening in the rest of the South area. That means the people, they see the benefit of having that mine there so that they can protect it. But of course, the minister has said that the critical path for us going forward, because the mine has a 15 to 20 year life if you are lucky, we want to see the agricultural, businesses going so that they can employ people in that area. It's a very strategic area right next to the Orange River Mouth. There's a lot of fresh water that if you're just able to tap it and irrigate those deserts, we will be able to produce food for the country. So we need to realize that opportunity, and we want especially to partner the community in ensuring that they achieve those goals. And on the industrial front, of course, we need to see what else we can do in that particular area. So thank you very much.
On SA Express, we are aware that the financial position of the airline remains significantly constrained, and the targets that we have here are focused to accelerate the turnaround over and above other strategic initiatives that we are putting in place. So for the last 5 years or so, SA Express has not been able to make profits. They've been making losses, and as a result, they've had to borrow a lot for their operations. And as a result, they've got very high liabilities as compared to the assets and the revenues that they generate. So their gearing is sitting at 5.64%. The loan repayments for the year are about 150 million, so they have to make sure that they make enough revenue to decrease the creditors' book. And then one of the other initiatives that they're focusing on is savings. So they've embarked on a cost containment initiative with a target of about 270 million rand. And then on the operational part, aircraft utilization is sitting at 88%, which means that for all the hours that the aircraft that they have are supposed to operate, they only operate at 88%, which is acceptable to a certain extent, but also you would want to see the utilization be much higher than what it is. But this is affected mostly by the maintenance schedule and the aging aircraft that they have. And then on another indicator that is used widely by the airlines is the baggage that is mishandled per 1,000 passengers. In this case, SA Express is doing very well. There's only about 3 bags per 1,000 passengers that are mishandled. And then the BBB score is sitting at 4. The total BBB spend is 40% of the total spend, and training is 5% of the personal cost. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Chair. I'd also deal with your issue. As Minister has already indicated, the department is heavy in terms of the numbers in corporate management as compared to sector teams. Program 1 has 171 employees, that is corporate management. Legal and governance has 22 employees. And portfolio management has 91. However, we are currently reorganizing the structure of the department to ensure that we optimize the current resources. We have, of course, have to be within the budget that has been allocated to us. The two DDGs vacant positions are in the process of being filled. The vacancy rate is 10%, but most of those vacancies are in the process of appointment.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The last slide, I think greater emphasis here has been set in terms of the roadmap that we've largely been concentrating on the first slide, which is the stabilization, meaning that is a strategic approach that we have assumed operationally, that we continue to explore programs that will improve stability of the state-owned companies and contribute to economic development. In the outer years, we'll be focusing on ensuring that we strengthen them. We will also be repositioning the department and its own companies through a growth trajectory to deliver projects positively, as outlined in the NDP and in the 9-point plan. And for the future, also, we recognize that as a shareholder, through delivery of this particular project, we would have optimized the net shareholder function and greater contribution into the economy. So I think that's a summarized presentation that outlined our start plan and the APP chairperson. Thank you very much.
DG and the officials of the department, thank you very much for that in-depth presentation. I will now allow honourable members to get clarity questions and critique the presentation itself. Any other hands? I don't see any. Honourable Liange?
Thank you, Chalazin. Let me first appreciate the narrative given by the relevant DDGs as it relates to the SDGs, and of course complementing well the overall presentation by the DG, preceded by the overview by the Minister. I think we must recognize the fact that there is logic in what has been said here. Logical in the sense that the government agenda in terms of ensuring that we utilize the SOCs to reach the heights as it relates to the economy of the country, at least there is some light. But say to say the indication that in some of the entities there is an agreement, a view that says the weaknesses as they exist, there is a remedial kind of a method that the department is to employ in assisting the entities. But my question relates to the government of the SOEs themselves. Do we have the board with the necessary capacity to guide the processes of ensuring that the different mandates of the entities are actually here and implementable, not necessarily guided by the CEOs, but at a governance level, at not at a management level, at a governance level, where the boards are, because that's the cornerstone of our democracy. If these processes are led at the phenomenal level, not in the discipline, then there is a problem. So in some of the boards, like in your subcourt, there are guests which have been there and they actually affected the management and the kind of instability that is there. We need to get an indication as it relates to that. And also maybe the merger between these SAFS and these other entities, maybe we'll actually address the problem that has been there, because what SACS has done or where SACS is today, it's not something that you can say it's they stagnation. Taking it for a fact that is the background of such an entity speaks for itself. But we need to say, DG, at an oversight level, because of the understanding and your ability to conduct oversight over them, then we can say even other SOCs that are not under your oversight role, that we want them to, will actually benefit out of that. And in fact, the government will benefit out of that, because we want job creation, we want stability, and if there is no stability, there is no hope that there will be such jobs created. And then the feeling of vacant positions across the entities, especially at Transnet, it's something that we actually engaged them as we had some sessions with them, but we don't get an understanding from the board if they are very up to scratch in realization of the importance of such a movement. Yeah, I think those are the aspects that I wanted to check. Maybe on HR, one would maybe check the general retention strategy of the department now, not necessarily the entities at the departmental level, because we want to see growth, we want to see sustainability of the FFPs at your disposal. You need to plan accordingly and make sure that you are the greener pastures that people always look for. They must not look elsewhere. You can't develop, you can't promote growth within for other people to live from you. Thank you.
Any other honorable member?
Thanks, Chair. So, I see that the department has given us, or yeah, the DDGs have given us in their presentation on each and every SOC and their performance targets. And what I need to know from the department is it's the regulation of the executive of SAFCO, the impact that it has done within the company itself, and what are we looking at in future for that company? Because I'm asking the question because I thought of the expansion of SAFCOL to other provinces, because there are provinces that have got the trees and yeah. Those provinces are much, they are areas of where SAFCOL can operate. is much taken by private companies, which I think the private companies have got their own mandate that they work on, of which of course did not have the same mandate, especially in the social development of those areas and the development of youth in those areas. I am always concerned about it, Chairperson, because in Joburg, in Eastern Cape, we've got an area where Sakol can operate, but it was taken over by that company that I forgot its name. And the area is not developing, but the company is making a lot of money. PG Bison, the company's name. The impact of that big company in that area, you don't see any development in this. Even Kayuki is a small town. Kayuki, you don't see any development. And I am worried because now that the company is like what it is now, I'm worried of its future. The other question that I have, Chairperson, I think it's a general, or it's a question on Alexco and in that area where Alexco is operating. With the last interaction with Alexco, Chairperson, there was a sense that there is no more much mining that is being done in that area, and they would look at more agricultural and other means of having production on the area. How far is Alexco with those initiatives that they have? I'm not sure if it's relevant for me to ask the department, or I should ask Alexco. Alexco. The last question, Chair, and maybe before the last question, it's just a concern that I usually raise, that the developmental mandate of all these companies or all the LLCs that we have on public enterprises is not felt on the ground. We are coming from different provinces. We are coming from different areas. For example, if you speak about Udenel and the Asaris or the Intense or whatever educational programs that Denel has, you introduce the subject with the schools where our constituencies are, but they will ask. Where is this thing happening? Is it happening in Joburg, Cape Town, and then maybe not in our area? But I always say there is no noise about the developmental mandate of all these resources. The last question, Chair, is the APP or in the APP of 2015-2016, where the department had 7 key performance indicators, and now they only have 2 in the current one. And if you have 2, how do we, or how do you track the performance of this the performance in finding exactly what is supposed to, because here you have a 57.7% portion in the budget that you use in the program. Your program, it's program one, and your program years of administration. Does that mean that 57.7% that you are going to use, is it only going to go in your salaries? and the only the two performance indicators that you indicated here. And why do you only have two now? I think those are my few comments and questions that I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Let me also ask some few questions in relation to both the APP and the strat plan. The first one is on the strat plan. Is it revised as it's revised? And what could be the reason? Because last year you made a revision and the reasons were that you requested treasury to deviate. Is it that other year or last year as you were given that permission? The second one is in relation to the performance target of ESCOM on socioeconomic development, on expenditure on skills. The target, the amount, the 8.4 billion is a lot of money. And how will you be able to track, how will you be able to monitor, not in terms of money, in terms of the categories of the skills development? Other is how many will you issue out, and then in engineering, how many engineers are you expecting to, so that it's easier for you to check the amount vis-a-vis the actual product you are monitoring. It is also the same with the local content, local spend at 65%. You remember the last time when we were talking about, I don't know if you're in this meeting, yeah, you're in this meeting, when we were talking about the manufacturing, local manufacturing products. Now you just say at 65%. Even on, it will be very difficult to monitor, to say at which product, at what level. So if you can maybe unpack it together so that we have an understanding. The staff calls, the local content also at 55. Is it maybe because of market issues or what? It's very low. It's very, very low. And the new codes, okay, no, it's fine. And if you can just maybe DG, take us through those elements.
PM wants to come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the most of the questions are going to be answered by the DG and the DGs. But I thought that there is a question which needs to be answered by us is the question that relates to board. The challenge that we have, Honorable Yanga, is that if something happens to the company, or the company is used to have acted recklessly, the people who must face the music is the board. They would even be personally liable. Now, we are always faced with a situation where a board will say, we have identified this risk or this allegations of corruption. Should the shareholder not give permission at least for them to investigate them, that risk will move to the shareholder. Now, in the two entities in denial, there were allegations that were reported, and the board felt that they needed to be given space to investigate them. The previous board of staff call, did some investigations using the office of the accountant general. And when this post took over, they just implemented a consolidation of all the investigations that they done. And they said that certain officials or executives had a case to answer. And some chose to resign. Some have been suspended pending them appearing before the disciplinary hearing. So, not all resignations will result, in fact, are a destabilization in the negative effect to the company. But what would be bad in a situation where we come to you or we realize when things are very bad and things could have been picked up and be dealt with expeditiously. So in the two SOCs, staff call and denial, there are quite a number of allegations that have been raised or leveled against the executives, which some of them are PMA violations. What we have made it clear to the board is that we needed these investigations to be concluded as soon as possible, so that we have a way forward. In certain areas, I think we will just, for instance, one of the biggest achievements we have achieved with Transnet is for the first time it became an original equipment manufacturer in the coaches area, where it built coaches for Botswana. But the challenge was that it was not heavily publicized because of the agreement between the Botswana government and Transnet. The president of Botswana wanted these locomotives to be unveiled and seen first by the people of Botswana. So we were asked to do a media blackout. But if colleagues could have seen the product that was developed by Transnet, it has got Wi-Fi, the Dutch train has got Wi-Fi, it has got a business class coach, it has got economy class, it has got a kitchen inside, it has bathrooms, it's a top class train. The Minister of Transport and Communication of Botswana was there and very excited. It's one of the products, I think, after that we can be proud to sell it to the rest of Africa, even to the rest of the world.
When we wait for it, move on the DM on that one. Is now the blackout lifted?
The blackout has been lifted.
Okay.
They wanted, the train has to be moved in the middle of the night so that nobody can see it until the president in Botswana and has unveiled it to the people of Botswana. That train was finished leaving ahead of schedule by Transnet. If you look at Denel, there was an event in Russia and there is a lot of demand for our AUVs from most of the Commonwealth of Independent States. It's your former Soviet bloc. There are quite a number of things that are being done by our SOCs, but I think the challenge that we will have, which we also ask even the portfolio committees to assist government, because it's not something that DPE alone can do. For instance, if you engage colleagues of the Department of Trade and Industries about the incentives, they say, no, we can't give you those incentives because we are auditing. And these are the issues that we need to deal with as a government. Now, the argument is that you avoid auditing, but you do bail out. So these are some of the issues that we need to do a comprehensive discussion and an approach as government. The last one, I think it is generally going to take time, honorable member of the DA. This bill, because if you were to pass a bill that is going to give private enterprises or any entity powers to run the SOCs, you are in effect amending the Companies Act, which falls under the Department of Trade and Industries. Our SOCs stand between your public environment and the private environment. It is a bill that we think that the discussions and the negotiations are going to take quite some time. And for instance, if you look at the case, the Comair case against government on the principles of economic neutrality, all those issues have to be taken into account. That is why we are moving quickly with a concept document, a concept paper that must be thoroughly discussed so that we get a lot of buy-in, even with other government departments and companies. We do think that our systems, we are trying to attract the best board members we can, but the challenge, even with the appointment of judges, is that you still have to meet the issues of gender, you still have to meet the issues of privacy disadvantage. If you can just say you want to get the best board, which means you are going to be recycling all the people that are currently in the private sector. So as we get, as we appoint new board, we also ensure that we fuse in new blood so that our there is capacity in that, also in that industry. The challenge that we really do have now, if we don't build that capacity even amongst a combination of old board and young people, very soon when those people decide to retire, I think we wouldn't have built that capacity. And what we are doing in our appointment, there will be skills metrics, ensure that people are filled with developmental objectives, the commercial viability, they are well qualified, but at the same time, we must also ensure that we address the issue that previously disadvantaged people did not have access to those opportunities of being board members. And we also, we consciously take a decision that we infuse those new young people, those people from the previously disadvantaged communities, so that we have a sustainable pool of board members. But we can assure you that all the board members that we have appointed are suitably qualified people. But they need, some of them need to be exposed to that environment so that we can continuously develop that proper skill. Thank you, sir.
That directly it also helps DM. And we really need to put a fight with departments in order to address the issue in relation to you do the bailouts, but you don't want to incentivize the help. And those are the issues also we have to ask our researchers to lead to do a further research on what solutions can we come up with. Thank you.
In terms of other questions, the feeling of vacancies, yeah, I think that's a very important point. With regard to our executive positions, I think at first the most important thing is to acknowledge the capacity that you have inside. You give them enough chance to expose themselves and to be able to see, because if you are not acknowledging people you have, to give them a chance to grow and constantly focus on bringing people from outside, it also creates an imbalance. So normally when we take that approach, it may give us some time, sometimes 3 months or so, to give people an opportunity to act and prove themselves, failing which it's only then that we subject them to competition. And then we take the best candidate. So, three of the positions, they are at an advanced stage now. I hope next time we come, most of the DDG positions will have been filled. The retention is another area. We did discuss it even up until last night. We were at length discussing it. And we are citing an example with the intense. To say DPE is a different department, so when we bring in even interns, we must take the best of the best, because the idea is to invest in those individuals to make sure that they become the cream of the capacity for the country to deal with SOCs. Because ESCOM, if you look at ESCOM, huge as it is, probably the biggest company in the country. To do oversight on it, you really need people of a certain capability in terms of all areas. So that's the type of skills that we need. So to retain them, sometimes you find that public service is has some limitations, but we're trying to apply all the best measures we can. We do lose some of the capability, but we try at all costs to stretch within the limits of public service and to retain them. But we realize that also it's important to also create a base so that unless you have someone who's very good, at some point you lose this person, but below that person there has to be a good number of those that can learn and always fit into that particular position. But now because of the budget cuts, they give us also limitations, continuous cuts on the compensation. But we creatively try to also work within the limits of our savings. It's more or less a routine management challenge. Consistently we advise one another with the DDGs on how to deal with this. And we are hoping that we will continue to manage it. I think other questions, the DM has answered it, the questions around the boards and all that. Core questions around the project and the target. Just as you allow, I've other two DDGs who have spoken, DDG the Kim Bono and DDG the Kim Isan. The Kim Bono gives the economic impact and all the targets around field development and all that. She's running a system that monitors them. So I think she can just give more or less a short perspective on how they deal with that, and then JG can also give procedures with strategic partnership and financing. So also some of those strategies they could really elaborate how to the committee that how do they deal with those.
Thank you,
DG.
In regarding the performance targets on the socio-economic development, we do have
quite detailed targets that we stipulate within the shareholder context. So we unpack those in the shareholder context. Then in terms of the monitoring, we do get quarterly reports to monitor those. What we also now introduced is the verification to just manage the risk of the reporting of the numbers to make sure that we check the veracity of the numbers that are reported. So that process of verification has only started, and it depends basically on the extent of the resources we have. So at the moment, we introduced a system where we send some of the officials out to just verify some of the numbers that are reported. Amongst other things, we also now requesting the companies when they report to say, for instance, say they trained a number of engineers, we try to get them to give us a sample, giving us the identification numbers of those people, so that if we were to go and do this test, we aim to know that there are actual people that have been trained. Over and above that, we are now getting into a process where we try to get much more impact, where we now trying to align the skills that they are training, because we associate with the problem where they train for themselves and for the economy, and then you find that because of the state of the economy, it's difficult for those to be absorbed elsewhere. So we're basically coming up with a strategy as a department to say we need to partner with provinces and municipalities and come up with initiatives that will create other new businesses and cooperatives, building them at the back of the skills base that's going to be released, for instance, out of the build programs, but also out of the normal training programs of the SOCs as part of their schools of excellence where they do the normal skills development in line with the targets that have been set for themselves. So we are paying much more attention there to just make sure that it's progress, but also we're now adding an element where we will work with the provinces and municipalities to find a way of ensuring and also regulating to check that those who are participating in the training program and in the internship, that they actually do come from those areas where we are targeting beneficiaries to be from. Because we will find that if one is addressed in a specific area, if that's what they use in their application with the SOC, there might be no way to check. So with partnerships with the actual local municipalities and with the provinces, we will be putting in place additional elements there where they will assist us in terms of verifying some of those people that participate in those. And also in terms of bursaries, we're looking into saying we're going to check with the provinces again with having set certain criteria to say in targeting the young people that are placed in their provinces, how do we get those that will come from those areas? So it will help us to get benefits from these programs to be at the real targeted area. So those are some of the things that we're aiming at, but we do have a monitoring system within the department. And also we do get those reports that we check. Thank you.
Yeah, I think on that, we have seen other mechanisms to track failed, like you have bursaries where are supposed to be allocated to the children who disadvantaged children, and they are allocated to children of archaeology, and your system is able to really verify in the true sense that what's your criteria? Are you having a advantage, or you have a specific type?
So listen, I think on the high side, we are also introducing a different approach. That's why when we said to bring in greater accountability by ensuring that we work together with the partners in the new era now, what we are bringing on the table is a situation where we do not move the process entirely to the entity itself. Now, as a department with the provincial departments and other stakeholders, because the minister and deputy minister also, as they do their work, they engage other stakeholders where you realize that they pick up areas that require immediate response. So we bring in a mix of all these
combinations, so that it is not only left up to the entity to decide. Of course, a certain portion the entity would, based on specific skills, yes. But for our greater outreach, we also ensure that a sizable amount targets areas of development. And so far, it is responding as well. That's why I was making that example on the Chi community. That those were identified, and the normal process at the local community level is the one that informed and even identified the learners.
Thank you. Just one last element. I wanted to also indicate that for some of the entities that have offices or regional presence in across provinces, they also have local people who are based in regional offices who then try and channel the the funding to be allocated to the beneficiaries within those localities over and above. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicky. Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee. I think the issue on the local content in terms of how do we actually quantify the 65%, that is actually used it working closely with the other departments, for example, the DTI. However, not only that, we actually, as the deputy minister actually indicated, in terms of what is actually done in TB, we can be able to actually now demonstrate that as South Africans that we have the capability and the ability to actually produce some of these complex instruments we have. And when we actually do that, it's important that it actually is very representative, women-owned, youth-owned, and disabled people. Because this is one other area that when we actually engage these other groups, they've also indicated that in terms of these opportunities as and when they actually happen, they're actually not actually included. So in terms of this local funding that we actually trying to have, especially on the procurement, etc., we actually set them as targets. However, we also try and encourage SOCs to have such targets to say, this is not the ceiling that you need to have. You actually need to go beyond, given where we are, because as a country, we need to deal with the challenges and actually be able to develop this industrial capability. So that's about in terms of actually producing the locals. It's actually quite exemplary, and that we want to replicate going forward and begin to inculcate that in terms of our SOC, not only with only transfer and contact in terms of the broader portfolio. And I think also, you know, us being able to have been able to demonstrate that as South Africa, we have the capability and capacity to build world-class international businesses, then I think it will actually give us more credibility and more confidence for us now to be given more opportunities and for them to begin to address the challenges, that we, the socio-economic challenges that we are actually facing.
Okay, lastly, I think also in finalizing to respond to your question, I think the other part of the question, Chair, is when you are probably not saying it, but you're also looking at these targets are numbers to say the EE spends 75%, but in practical terms, what do they translate to? This may actually mean benefiting the same people, the same company, on a continuous basis.
That's right.
That's
my mind.
Okay, no, that I would tell that it is troubling me also. And because of the scarcity of issues, number two, in other instances, in foreign-based companies that are providing certain services. And you also realize the pattern that sometimes when this company leaves, or it gets bought over by another foreign company. So now what we are working on with the DDGs is to try and come up with a mechanism that ensures that this BEE target
SDGI is talking about local content and all. It's mechanisms of trying to tie these companies to ensure that they partner with local people. But at the same time, we also want to create a mechanism, which is something we will have to perfect over time. That's when I signed an MOU with the Department of Small Business, to ensure that we then create new companies. But because of the nature of the work, it requires people who are already skilled. It means some of the people who are working in these companies, we must find a way of encouraging them, some of them, to go into the private sector. Because of the fact that, if I have to set an example, dealing with a nuclear business, for instance, it requires a scientist, someone at a certain level, who would be able to set up a company that can be able to do certain things, which ordinarily an ordinary person would not do. So it's just a thought process, but it is worrying us that we do not want to continuously empower the same. There has to be that continuous introduction of new people, new companies. That's where youth empowerment will come in. And I think as you probe us with these questions, also you are more or less also directing us to be brave enough to deal with these issues. Thank you very much.
Any other input, views, questions, Honourable Stanley?
Thank you, Chair. I was hoping that I would, by letting everyone else leave with questions, I'd get some kind of clarity regarding this so-called strategic plan and annual performance report. But I can't. Because I'm new to the committee, I sat with last year with the previous strategic plan, the current strategic plan, and I found it the most difficult document, and I hope this hasn't gone to print yet, that it's been printed officially, because it'll be a huge waste of money if it has. The amount of inaccuracies, the jump in page numbers, the layout, the weird information that all of a sudden appears. You had five programs. Your strategic objectives differ from 5 to 7 to 9 within pages 11 and 21, for example. Your previous strategic plan, all of a sudden there's 3 extra projects included in this one. And I know that your previous selection plan was only based over 4 years, whereas this one is 5, which is in line with Treasury's requirements. But all of a sudden 2016-2017 year has moved to a positioning year when it was supposed to be a strengthening year, for example. I don't know if you've just moved the whole plan or whatever, but I was looking at, look, and they were a very good department, brilliant, but at what I was used to in the Department of Environmental Affairs, and they are an absolute example to any department in terms of the layout and the kind of information and the understandability and things like that. I just think that this whole strategic plan, as well as its so-called annual performance report, where there's no actual indication of achievement versus failed versus etc. I would just take too long, Chairperson. But I certainly would like to recommend that the department takes this back and comes and presents a much better. I have major issues, and perhaps what I should do is I should go through all of my notes in the various documents and submit them to you personally, if you would like, but this is disappointing. Very disappointing.
It's noted, Honourable Spender, you remember I asked them whether the strategic plan is revised and what are the reasons. So maybe they were still going to answer that, and But as far as maybe they will answer for themselves in relation to the phrase target or whatever. I, in my understanding, this is a forward-looking presentation, not the report as such, not the report of the department.
No, but the annual performance plan and strategic plan.
Yes, plan. Mm. Yes, the forward, the plan.
Yeah.
I don't know if me they will answer. Please.
Well, Chair, maybe let me outline it this way. In reality, departments differ from one to the other because it's different sectors. But the framework is the same. And if you look at, we follow the framework, because if you look at the outline, there's that, let me say, it's like a simple example of page 135. It takes you between 2012-13 to 2018-19, which means progressively you put up targets as you go. And that's how it gets done. Yeah, but now, what then we do, I think what I'm expecting rather, it's probably a view that says, how do you, okay, maybe let me outline this way, Chairperson. If you recall, Chairperson, not so long ago we presented our quarterly report. And our quarterly report was based on the APP that we have just closed now as the year ended. And what we are presenting to you also is the very APP. Some of these targets were, because I think we always give you a target now and probably a 2 year because it's rolling toward the outer years. Now, and it also gives us an opportunity, as I've outlined in our presentation, the opening, that with the changing economic circumstances, there are new dynamics that come into play. And if we do not adjust these things, Chairperson, then it means we are not coming to you to present you a plan. It means we are simply reprinting an old book and bringing it to your table. A plan should, of course, begin to come to the committee and say, based on the changes that are here, we saw the need to adjust that area. That's why we are strongly bringing in the intergovernmental aspect. It's an engagement that requires resources. We have to put in resources there. We have to put in programs there. But unique our department to others is that also the core of the implementation also will be done by the state-owned companies. And that's where we are reflecting targets in those other presentations. That shows that how are we contracting our state-owned companies to make sure that they are able to report consistently to us. To simplify it further, probably maybe on the outer years, we then probably have to give maybe a 5-page, if you allow. We can give you maybe an additional 5-page document that simply puts in the objectives and the target and how we'll be reporting them per quarter. Then it becomes when we bring a quarterly report, you know that we come to you with a report that is purely based on that, which will deduct a deduction out of this document. And so but now it becomes very difficult for us because we are not presenting this anew.
Maybe honorable members need a simplified, not a simplified, because the AG, I don't know if the Sun has circulated what the AG said about the APP, the strategic plan. Okay. The AG has approved, and then if that is within the framework, it will differ from the department to one another. So I don't know if to make members to have a sense of understanding. I don't know if there will be any other further simplification of what you did. I don't know. Let's bring our heads together and see what we can do. But based on what the Auditor General has said about theirs, he said he has approved it. He said it's within the framework and he didn't see anything wrong with that. I think the Sun will forward to all members. Uh, Honorable Yenge, or an honorable, or maybe it's the quality of the reporting.
I'm quite capable of understanding things, but this document is shocking. The layout, the understandability. If you're going to start changing programs and changing position years and phases and things like that, it's very well that the Auditor General has said.
Well done.
It's not well done. It's said we approve it. That doesn't mean that, as you quite rightly say, that it's the quality of the report. What I'm saying is,
sorry, my microphone on, not that it needs to be, but all that I'm saying is go and have a look at the Department of Environmental Affairs. They also have entities, and they also have different things like that, but the quality of that document is incredible. And this looks like a Stage 5 project where someone has just put a heading and a paragraph. And the page number of an official to go from, I went from page 50 to 23 to page 2 to, I'm just saying, gentlemen, ladies, this is a Stage 5 document whereas you could do much better. If you take what I'm saying from whence it comes, it's not meant to be a criticism, but if you look at this document and compare it to the Department of Environmental Affairs, no, it can be so much better. And it shouldn't be, I'm not saying it needs to be simplified, I'm just saying the quality of the document. And you shouldn't need to give a presentation on your annual performance plan or strategic plan before someone or the public reads it. They shouldn't have to be here and attend this hearing to get an explanation. No. All of that information needs to be included in the document, an assessment of the situational analysis, the different programs that you've got, and how your key performance indicators tie in with that. I'm just saying that what I am used to in another department is far superior to this, and it's just a recommendation that you go back and relook at this document, because I had to drink a glass of wine after comparing, you know, the various documents. It was quite tragic.
I think you're correct on our standard. Is the quality. Yeah, the quality really needs much to be desired. GD and the Deputy Minister, it's not looking good. It's not really looking good. When you check the numbering as well, the capturing of subtopics as well, the outlay, is it the outlay? The layout. The layout is not really good, and I think, I don't know whether are we tolerating, because you look into the previous ones, it looks like year after year, that other year it was better when we arrived, the last year one it was better, this one I think is more of a rush job or whatever, but you need to crack the whip so that you bring quality documents to us at GT.
As for the layout, generally what happens from experience is that, let me answer the question. This one is not, the one that goes to print has to get the normal format. This one is the work that is generated internally. And because we have to meet your deadline and everything, we didn't want to waste money to take a document for print because the printing machines have got the capability of putting it in the manner in which it would come closely and properly done. That part I would agree. But in terms of the content, because quality is also content, that's where I would agree with them advice, because every line we edit, every way do we check. On that note, Chair, I can completely disagree. Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Do we have any other issues with the officials from the department and the minister, the deputy minister? If we don't have any other issues, I would like to thank you very much for this engagement, and we are looking forward to meet you again with new ideas and new proposals to take the state-owned and the state-owned companies forward. But I'm very much interested about the locomotives we went to Ghana and we didn't even see them. We didn't even know. We understand the media thing. But it would be nice to showcase at one point to say this is what we have done as South Africans, so that we become proud of what has happened. The way the deputy minister was explaining them, the first class thing with the internet, with the televisions and so on, that sounds very good. It tells us that the things we are doing in the country, we don't communicate. So we'll plead with you, even if the reason why I asked you if the blackout has been removed, you said yes. Let's come out and show our people what we have done. Thank you very much, and have a blessed weekend, and drive safely back home. We'll meet after elections, isn't it? For the next 2 weeks, we'll still be together. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe it's the entities. Okay, thank you, and enjoy your drive and place. I'm going to spend the lunch.
Two things. Can we get a copy of the revised and don't do one before it goes to print, even if it's by electronic format? And, you know, just a last comment that you can go to environment.gov.za for an example of what true class is. Just to, you know.
Oh, don't do it, yes.
And then, ma'am, I think we do have a set of minutes.
Yes. Yeah. 1 hour. I want to release them. That's really me.
Okay.
Thank you.